Hey folks, it's Philip with the Everyday Fighter Podcast, where we share stories and insights from everyday fighters just like you. Today, I'm very excited to bring you my conversation with Larissa Eichacker. Larissa is a master's boxer. So if you're not familiar with that term, there's actually a boxing league, an amateur boxing league for folks that are 35 years old and older. And Larissa got her start in boxing in her mid-40s. I really enjoyed listening to her journey from very unlikely beginnings all the way through to where she is now, having a few amateur bouts under her belt and continuing to go strong. So I'm sure you're going to get quite a bit out of this. But before we get into that, I wanted to get into our episode spotlight. Now, just as a reminder, these spotlights are unsponsored. These folks have no idea who I am or that I'm doing this at all. But once in a while, we'll see just people or causes that I feel are doing some really good work, and I really just want to give them a bit more attention. And today, I wanted to talk about Returning the Favor. And this is a show on Facebook that is hosted by Mike Rowe. Now, if that name sounds familiar, it is because that is the same Mike Rowe that used to be the host of Dirty Jobs on the Discovery Channel. But he has a show on Facebook where he highlights just everyday people that are doing a lot of good in their community. So he and his crew go in under the guise of doing a documentary on people that do good. While part of that is true, the bigger thing that they're doing is doing something nice for them at the end. So surprising them with a makeover of sorts for their facilities, or a big check, something that really helps to elevate the people that he's spotlighting. So that show is Returning the Favor on Facebook. And with that, let's jump into my interview with Larissa Eichacker.
A small town in western Kansas, and I wasn't really involved in sports in any way. I mean, as a little kid, I did, you know, some little league softball and stuff like that, but I didn't play sports in school or anything. And then I went to college, and, you know, again, I played like a little bit of intramural just for fun softball, just very, very minor. For the most part, I was just a complete geek hanging out, studying all the time. I could hear, I went to the University of Washington in Seattle, and I could hear the people cheering from the stadium when the football games would be going every Saturday, but I would be in the computer lab doing my homework. I had never really been very involved in sports. Mid to late 20s, I had two boys, got married and had two boys. And, you know, that kind of dictated what I did for quite a while. Mm. And unfortunately, during that time, due to a couple of different reasons, partly just blame it on myself and lack of activity or whatever, and being busy with the kids, and also some health problems, which maybe I'll get into later. But it just ended up, over the course of 10 years, putting on quite a bit of weight. And, you know, once my kids were a little bit older and I had a little bit more time, I thought, you know, I gotta do something. I gotta figure out some sort of activity. To bring in the health problems, part of that was, in my late 20s, I got arthritis. And it was originally believed to be rheumatoid arthritis, and then after a few years of more tests, they think probably not rheumatoid arthritis, but they're not sure what, some sort of autoimmune inflammatory joint something or another. So there were periods in my early 30s where, you know, going for a walk around the block hurt too much. So that contributed to the weight gain, as well as, you know, just not paying attention to myself and my own health, and, you know, always snacking on stuff every time the kids snacked on stuff. So it was a little bit of everything contributed. But I got to a point where I thought, you know, I've got to do something. And I started out, this will lead to boxing eventually, but I started out with dragon boats, and a lot of people don't know what those are. It's not rowing. It's a little bit more like a canoe paddling stroke, but not really a canoe paddling stroke. It's a little bit like outriggers, if you've seen outriggers. But so dragon boats, there's 20 paddlers on a boat sitting side by side. So you're just doing, you're just paddling on one side of the boat. And there's competitions all over the world. But it was a sitting sport. I thought, well, this is good, because primarily it's my knees were where my joint problems really started early on. So I thought, all right, I can do this. I can get in shape by doing a sport where I can sit down and still be part of a team and compete and get that sort of adrenaline of that going, you know. So I joined a team, and the coach, I did that off and on for quite a long time. And the coach of the dragon boat team would do these boot camp type workouts in the off season and right at the beginning of the season to just help everyone sort of get in shape before we got on the boats. And one day, one of the stations she set up was boxing. And we had never seen her do that before, but she brought out a pair of mitts and two gloves, and we would move from station to station. So there'd be weightlifting and then the treadmill and then squats and then, and then maybe the bike, and it would be, you know, all these rotations. So one of the stations was just punching the mitts, and I had never had boxing gloves on my hands in my life. It had never crossed my mind to even, boxing was not a sport I ever even followed. And I know Jeff Ronning, and I listened to his podcast that you did with him, and, you know, he had always followed boxing, and it was a huge part of his life. And for me, it couldn't be more opposite. I was in my mid-40s doing this boot camp class and put these gloves on my hands and punched some mitts, probably with the worst form anyone's ever seen. And I just thought, hey, I kind of like this. This is good. And she did that two sessions in a row. And after the second one, I went home and I lived in Portland at the time. And I just Googled, boxing gyms in Portland, and then started making some phone calls the next day while I was at work. And, I think by within a day or two, I was signed up for a class. It was actually, it actually ended up being, Muay Thai kickboxing much more than boxing. And it was very much like a cardio boxing fitness type thing. It wasn't geared towards competition or anything. It was a fitness thing, but it was the hardest workout I'd ever done, and I loved every minute of it. And that's where it started. That's how I went from just being like a mid-40s office worker and mom and housewife to falling in love with the sport. So. And you know, I have lost your audio.
Sorry. Oh yeah.
Oh, okay.
It never ceases to amaze me how people find their way
right
to this, or like, you know, this so funny. So, okay. A lot of places I want to go here, but
right. That was a very long answer to your first.
No, not at all. This is great. Now, okay, I want to go back to this this dragon boat thing. Uh-huh. So that's fascinating. I mean, because you said yourself that you didn't have a lot of sporting kind of experience.
No.
But you found this somehow, and it's in a team environment, and right. You're like, okay, there's a bit of competition in there.
Uh-huh.
I'm there's a bit of a gap for me. Like, how did you make that jump? You know?
Well, there's a few connections. And first of all, I have to say that the couple of very minor sports things that I did do in terms of like just a recreational league or whatever, it was always just for fun, you know, when a group of friends get together and they're drinking beer and they're playing baseball or whatever. But I always had a very competitive drive in those games, even though it was very, you know, very much just for fun, you know, I wanted to win, you know, and I always recognized that in myself, that competitive drive, even in recreational sports.
And I'm sure that spilled over to other areas of your life as well, academics and that type of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you know, everything's a competition in one way or another. But when I first started wanting to lose weight and get in shape, the gym that I joined, one of the trainers there started doing some other stuff outside of the gym, where she would get people to sign up to go on hikes and that type of thing. And I did some of that with her, and then she started a dragon boat team. There's an event in Portland that happens once a year. It's the Rose Festival, and it's like a week long or so festival, but one of the things that happens at that festival is a dragon boat race, and that event tends to get teams that are brand new to it, like a group of attorneys will say, hey, this year, for, you know, camaraderie or team building or whatever, we're gonna do the dragon boat race. And they do it once, and, you know, maybe some of them stick with it, some of them don't. So we had a whole team of women that all knew each other from the gym, and a trainer from the gym, and we were all brand new to it. Okay. So that first year was a little rough. You know, our coach was new, our steers person was new, every paddler was new. We had a lot of fun, and that team still exists. That started probably 20 years ago, and wow. That group still does that race every year. It's called Misfit Adventures.
So. Wow.
Yeah.
That's so fascinating to me.
Like, yeah.
It's just kind of like the little decisions. They get you to where you're going, you know, but right. You talked about like you're having challenges physically, mm-hmm. but then, you know, you said that you felt it was time to start doing something.
Right.
Now, was that just something, because here's the thing. I mean, if you have arthritis, your joint pains and that type of stuff, mm-hmm. that's challenging already in and of itself, as far as just doing anything physical.
Right.
So
right.
This feeling that you're getting, was it a feeling that you're getting that you needed to do something, or was someone telling you, your doctor's telling you, well, even with the pain, you still got to do something active?
Well, you know, I mean, it was sort of just that, knowing that in general, to be healthy, you have to be active. And it was more of just a thing about weight loss. Because over the course of probably from my early 30s to my mid 40s, so somewhere over the course of 10 to 15 years, I was always sort of putting on weight and putting on weight. And then all of a sudden it kind of, you don't realize, I mean, it sounds stupid, but you kind of don't realize how bad it has gotten. And then you see a picture of yourself, or you wake up one day and just, you know, one more day of the pants not fitting or whatever. And you're just like, I gotta stop. I gotta change something drastically. And you know, I had put on close to 100 pounds, but slowly over 10 to 15 years. But yeah, it was more of just a decision that I've gotta get healthy. I need to lose the weight. I need to find something fun to do and challenging to do to lose the weight. I love going to the gym. I go to the gym every day, but I knew I wouldn't be able to tackle that problem with just, all right, let's go get on the treadmill again. You know, I needed something a little different. So, and the boot camp stuff and the dragon boating got me kind of through the first hurdle of that. And in the first couple years, I lost 30 pounds. Then I kind of stayed there for a long time. And then sort of phase two was I lost another 30 pounds. And then once I got into boxing and stuff, then it was another 30 to 40. So when I'm at fight weighted, that's when I hit my 100 pound mark. So
I love it. when I'm at fight weight. Isn't it? Yes. It's the language. Of it.
I know. I wish it was my day-to-day weight, but it's hard to do. It's fight weight and it lasts a day or two. So
here's my thing though. Weren't you in pain this whole time? Because I gotta tell you, like, you know, you say rheumatoid arthritis. And, I mean, like, I have my issues. I have my challenges as well. And like when I have pain, there's nobody that would fault me for like just staying exactly where I am as says, hey man,
right.
You know, you think it's like, you do what you gotta do to, cause it's not just the physical thing, but even like just emotionally, mentally, I'm sure it takes it's pain takes its toll there right. also. Right. It's draining. So
right.
How did you get from there to, okay, I'm going to do something no matter what.
Right. Right. Well, the first part of that, actually, before I tried the dragon boating, I tried, all those different hikes and stuff that same trainer was doing. I found that I just couldn't do it.
Hmm.
I could go up and up and up hiking as much as you want, but coming down was just so painful. I had a few instances of wondering, am I going to get back down this trail or not? So then I realized, okay, I've got to start out with something with just zero impact.
Mm.
So that's where the paddling came in. And, you know, and I would sometimes still have issues with some arthritis in my hands or my shoulders or whatever, but it was a really good workout and it got me active again and spurred brought on the weight loss, the start of the weight loss with a sport where I could sit down. So, and then with, I don't know if this is true or not, but I remember reading somewhere long ago that with knee pain in particular, for every 1 pound of body weight, that translates to up to 3 pounds of extra force on your knees because of the, you know, you're usually on one leg or the other. So there's double. And then with the angles and everything else. So I don't know if that's true or not, but, extra weight, certainly I knew that it was that the pain of the joint problems partly led to the weight gain, but also that having that extra weight was making the pain worse.
Ah, I see.
So I knew that if I could, I had to start being more careful about my diet and get active to lose the weight so that my joints would feel better so that I could maybe start doing more things. So
it was, you realized there was a cycle there.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, this cycle, particularly with the pain, mm-hmm. it has to stop somewhere. Right. And you came to that realization.
Right. Right. Okay. Exactly.
Okay. Exactly. Kind of like you hit, like, I mean, you know, people use the term a lot, rock bottom.
Uh-huh.
I mean, but yeah. you hit your point of like, okay, you know, I got to start bouncing back now.
Right. Okay. Right. Yeah. Exactly.
So, take me back to that that circuit training
mm-hmm.
with the mitts.
Yeah.
What was that like? Because I mean, you know, again, like you said, you never touched that right. that kind of thing right. ever before. I mean,
right.
But there was something about it though that kind of resonated with you.
Definitely, it definitely sparked something in me, and I don't really know how to explain it. I grew up with two older brothers. We're all very close in age, though. And a lot of times people will say, oh, you probably grew up, you know, rough and tumble fighting with your brothers all the time. But we weren't like that. I didn't wrestle around with my brothers. I had never been in any sort of like physical tussle of any, in any way, shape or form ever in my life, you know, until I was in my mid 40s and put those gloves on. And it was just straight punches, just 1-2, 1-2, 1-2 on the mitts, just purely as a cardio type thing. And it just, I don't know why that clicked so much for me. It just felt good, you know? And I thought, wow, if that's something I can do for exercise as opposed to, biking, treadmill, whatever stuff that I don't really enjoy. And I thought, you know, let's give this a try. So
it resonated with you, and then you did the research. You found your first mm-hmm. gym.
Uh-huh.
What was that process like? You just walking in the door and
yeah. It was a little bit of a transition because I didn't go straight to a boxing gym. I went to a gym in Portland that I thought that I was originally signing up for a women's boxing class. But then when I got there, I found out it really was a martial arts gym. It was really a Muay Thai gym for the most part. But two nights a week, they did a women's cardio boxing and kickboxing class. So I didn't have that initial thing of like the fear of walking into sort of a traditional old school boxing gym, you know? Mm. So it was a little bit gentler transition maybe. and I stuck with that gym for a year. It was a really good workout, but the more I did it, the more I found that I liked the traditional Western boxing aspect of it more than the rest. I mean, I love the elbows and the knees and the kicks and all that stuff, but that didn't interest me in terms of taking it any further than exercise. I had no interest in getting in the ring and kicking somebody. But if someone showed me a really great combination on the mitt, you know, I was like, hey, you know, I kind of like this. So as I started, one of the reasons I stayed with that for a whole year was that that gym had a contract that I was locked into. But about halfway through that contract, I started researching just regular, straight up boxing gym. As soon as the one contracted ended, I switched and I spent the next couple of years at McConnell's Boxing in Portland, which was is owned by Molly McConnell, who's a former pro fighter, two-time world champion. And she does cardio classes. She does skills classes, and then also has an amateur boxing team as well. So it's a mix of sort of both of those worlds, the fitness clients and the competitive boxers. And at that time, I still just thought it would be, you know, an exercise thing, you know, and I went from doing the Muay Thai classes at the one place to the classes at McConnell's, and liked it even more and more, and did the skills classes, and then asked one day about, you know, I knew that there were team nights at the gym and that they sparred, but I wasn't part of that. So I kind of just started casually asking, you know, hey, you know, could I maybe spar? and luckily I was welcomed into that. And the really nice thing too about the way they would start sparring at that gym, instead of just like throwing you in and saying, yeah, see how it goes, is that it was very controlled. Who you were matched up with was very, you know, carefully selected. And as a new person, you would do your first few rounds with a jab only. Mm-hmm. And you would just trade jabs. I throw a jab, you throw a jab. And you would just trade like that for a while. So you can sort of learn about moving around the ring and blocking a jab and then throwing a jab. Once you had that down, you know, she would add in, you could do a jab and a hook, but still just your lead hand. And she would build on that and build on that and build on that. So that, I mean, because I think for anyone, the first time you step in, it'd be kind of frustrating, you know, if you're in there with someone else who knows what they're doing or doesn't know what they're doing, and you got all different kinds of punches coming at you, and you're trying to put together your offense and your defense and your footwork, and, you know, it's too much. So I feel really fortunate that I had that early experience where she built on each thing until finally, you know, they would just say, all right, get in and do a few rounds, you know?
Wow.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even with starting with the Muay Thai and then going to the boxing, all throughout it, it was still a focus, as you said, on the cardio side of things.
Right, right.
So there's definitely no contact there for either of those places, or?
Once I started sparring at McConnell's.
Okay. Yeah. But were you holding mitts and like tie pads and that type of stuff, even in those other?
Yeah. And the fitness classes at McConnell's are always split kind of 50-50, half on the heavy bag and then half where you partner up with someone with mitts.
Okay. Okay. So,
and it's combinations and counter punching and learning different defensive techniques and all sorts of stuff. So it was very much geared towards getting you ready for sparring or competing if you wanted to.
Gotcha. So it wasn't just particularly if you're holding for each other, yeah. It's really technique, skills-based kind of stuff there, not so much the cardio kind of stuff, which most people just do that on a heavy bag or something.
Right, right, exactly. Now, for the few years that I was at that gym, it was always a mix of both. So, okay. Which was fantastic.
But you were like, I mean, that was, to your point, I mean, you were, it was like the next step for, I mean, like if you're taking the step from the heavy bag to holding mitts, then it's just, okay, well, what's the next step after this?
Right,
it's gotta be. It's got to be, you know, touching up a bit.
Right. And I had no idea how I would respond to that first time sparring, you know. I'd never been hit in the face. I'd never been hit anywhere. I'd never been hit at all. I don't think I'd ever even been slapped. I mean, nothing, you know. And I had seen other people get in and say they wanted to spar, and the very first time they get hit in the face, they don't show up anymore. I was like, oh, I didn't like that. And you know, they're back to being doing it only for fitness, or they just drop it all together, you know? And so I was a little afraid that that might happen, or that I might just get punched in the face and start crying and leave. but it didn't, that's not the reaction I had at all. If anything, it just encouraged me to work harder and learn more and get better. And, it was more of a driving force than something to turn me away.
Well, and that's fascinating, right? Because it's, you know, I mean, to your point, it's, you see people that went through the exact same thing you're going through, yet they took it one way, you took it a completely different way. Now, I mean, because you're holding mitts for somebody, it's not necessarily such that they're going very soft on that. I mean, you felt the impact,
right?
It's just on your hands,
right?
Or, you know, on a, you know, like a body shield. That's, there's some impact there,
right? You know? Right.
So, you know, put your actual head in the equation,
right?
Then that's, I mean, nobody's going to would fault anybody for walking away from that.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
And yet you still did it.
Yeah.
I mean, take me through that, because it's again, you, I mean, and you reiterated it, you've never been hit, you never hit anybody else in your life, right? Yet this, I mean, did it seem like violence to you? I guess that's the thing for me, like, what, because typically when people talk about violence, that's kind of a scary thing, and it and like pure dictionary, you know, definition, boxing is a display of violence.
Right.
But you didn't look at, you see it that way.
I mean, I guess I had always thought of boxing that way. You know, if I'd see it on TV or whatever. And like I said, I'd never followed it before, but it had never really crossed my mind. And I had just thought of it as, just people beating each other up, you know, until I got into the sport and learned more about it and learned how involved it is and how difficult it is and everything that goes into it. And then once I actually got in the ring and started sparring, it never felt that way to me. It didn't feel like a violent thing. It just felt like, it felt like a very challenging sport. So
now, it's one thing to take a punch, see that glove coming your way. I found anyway, particularly in the classes that I teach, it's very different. And I know the same thing for me, very different to give that to somebody else. What was that process like for you to learn to be, to actually do that and to do it well?
You know, that's a good question. And I'm not sure that I know the answer to it. I guess I didn't have any problem with it. I just... I mean, you know, it's coming back at you. So you gotta be on it and be willing to do the same, you know, with control, of course, which is why, and maybe it's because I was introduced to it in such an incremental way at McConnell's in terms of trading jabs first, you know, and, you know, I'm going to block one, then I'm going to throw one, you know, and those were all, I don't want to say very, very light, not just a little tap. It was a little more than that, because you want the person to get the experience of actually blocking it. But I think maybe that's why, you know, because I wasn't just thrown in there one day and told go for it. you know, but I had this nice progressive introduction to it, which helped a lot. But I guess, yeah, I never had a problem throwing a punch at somebody.
Well, I mean, you just said something right there it's really interesting, that you're going light, quote unquote light, mm-hmm. and you want your partner to know what it's like,
right,
to quite frankly take a punch, right as well. So how important was that, and even now to you, in terms of working with your partner in that way? It's not like, it's not just about you hitting somebody else.
Right. You know, that is always a part of it. And now I spar usually a couple of times a week now, in Long Beach, and, you know, with a variety of different sparring partners. And for the most part, everyone has good control, but every now and then you get in there with somebody you've never sparred with before, and you're not quite sure what to expect. So you have to be kind of ready and prepared in case they're going to go all out. I mean, that very rarely ever happens. I have found that most people are very respectful. You know, you chat about it a little bit ahead of time about sort of what the goals are, but for the most part, we're all there to help each other. And, you know, so you're not going all out as if it's a competition, but you're not going so light that it's not even decent work for your opponent. It's that balance in between, so that you're both learning, you're both getting something out of the experience. You're both getting a workout and, you know, hopefully improving your technique and your using your skills, but without the goal of trying to hurt each other. You know, you want your sparring partners to keep working with you, you know.
And to your point, I mean, it's something that's going to vary from partner to partner,
right,
as well.
Right.
There's not like a one size fits all approach to definitely in that, especially when you're trying to keep it safe.
Exactly. And if I am sparring with someone where I have a significant weight advantage on them, then I'm going to dial it way back. It's my responsibility to do that. And I would hope that when I spar with people much bigger than me, that they feel the same way. Same with experience level. You know, quite often I will spar with someone who is just trying it out for the very first time, or maybe they've sparred a couple times with a coach, and then I'll do a few rounds with them. And in that instance, yeah, I go really, really light and slow down the pace a little bit, you know, but I don't want anyone to have their first couple of experiences in the ring be a disaster, you know, or scary or get hurt or anything else. But, you know, just light punches to kind of show where they're coming from, and we'll stop mid round and talk about, you know, here's how you might want to block this, or here's how you can slip this, or let's try this again, instead of just from bell to bell just going, you know. So there's always that sort of give and take and planning it out. And, you know, in the rare instance, maybe one out of every 100 people I've ever sparred with doesn't know how to control or doesn't want to control, and you don't spar with them again, you know?
Yeah, I hear it. I want to go back and talk about, because, you know, you started down this path and it took that definitely didn't happen overnight.
Right.
Now, even like when you started doing those hikes and, you know, the Dragon Boat team, all that type of thing, you know, of course, you've got your family there.
Right.
You know, your two boys and your husband. What were they like as you went through this kind of journey, going through, you know, when you made that decision, okay, I'm going to start being active, to all the different transitions that you made?
Yeah. You know, I would say everyone, all three of them were always, you know, incredibly supportive. You know, like starting out like with the hiking and the dragon boating, there was always weekend time away from the family, but I always had the support of my husband, you know, kind of divvying up shifts with the kids on the weekend when they were young, that kind of thing, so we could each go do our thing. And the dragon boating was usually like two nights a week plus one weekend. thing. So a couple late nights, that kind of thing. And it, you know, as anyone with a family and young kids knows, it, you know, my kids were young when I first started dragon boating, and, you know, there's always the trade-off and the balancing act, and the, you know, I'd get up and have like dinner ready at 6 a.m. before I went to work, so that when they came home, they would have dinner because I would be going straight to dragon boat practice and that kind of thing.
Gotcha.
And it really didn't get more involved in terms of time frame until my kids were kind of older and taking care of themselves. And so, because once I really got into boxing, once I switched from the Muay Thai gym to the traditional boxing gym, then it went to, you know, pretty quickly went to 5 nights a week plus Saturdays usually. Hmm. So, but at that point, you know, my kids were older. I think one of them was even gone away to college at that point. So, but yeah, it amazing support from all of them. So, and a lot of that in the early days meant that I was getting more active and more fit and could do more things together as a family, you know? So if we went camping together, I was able to go on hikes with the kids and all that kind of stuff, and bike rides or whatever. Whereas before it was usually, you know, my husband was the one who took them skiing or snowboarding and I stayed behind, you know, because my knees hurt or something hurt or whatever, you know. So.
That's a good point. I mean, that's not something I never even really thought of in terms of like, you know, a lot of people will think, okay, you're deservedly so. You take time for yourself and, you know, get yourself back on, you know, on track to where you want to be. It's going to take investment. Uh-huh. But then there's a lot of times people don't think about, well, there's a return to that as well.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. And that kind of helps switch things up a little bit, you know, just in terms of the family dynamic or whatever.
So what was the conversation like when you said, you know what, I think I'm going to start hitting people in the face and get hit in the face.
Right.
What do you think, family?
You know, I think, again, everyone was super supportive because they knew how much I had been enjoying, you know, doing this just for exercise and what a big part of my life it had become even before that. I quite often would get a concerned look as I was heading out the door of just like, oh, mom, be careful. No. Or if I came back with a little bit of a black eye or something that I was kind of proud of, they'd be like, oh, geez, are you all right? And I'm like, yeah, this is great. So, and then most of, you know, once I started competing, which has just been in the last 2 years, just because of schedules and locations and work and school and everything else, neither of my boys have ever been to one of my competitions. They're both in their 20s now, but we're living in different states and, you know, time off work or away from school or whatever. It just never really worked out. My husband has been to all of my fights except for one, though, and has just always been super supportive in every way. And I've done it enough times now that he kind of knows the cycle of what to expect leading up to it. First of all, the being super hungry and then getting really grumpy and getting a little stressed and a little tense and a little short-tempered. And then, you know, and then finally getting to the event and he knows when to just sort of like go somewhere else and stay away and let me do my pre-bout prep stuff and just sort of get in my head, you know. But, you know, he's always the first one there cheering and yelling as soon as I step out of the ropes and come down the stairs. So he's been an amazing support.
That's great. I think, you know, sometimes that part is forgotten a lot of times because, mm-hmm. I mean, it's one thing to hear it, like for family to hear that, okay, this is what you're doing. You know, especially mm-hmm. if they're not there. If they are there, I mean, they're seeing it like in kind of when you're training, right? So it's a different level than in competition, mm-hmm. where the intensity goes up quite a bit more.
Right.
Now they see you in this light. I mean, just from their point of view, that takes some adjustment.
Right.
You know, I mean, even I think just I remember my wife, before we were married, she'd go to my, like my, for martial arts, my tests, and they're fairly brutal. Uh-huh. So for her, hearing it for me is one thing, but then actually seeing it, yeah. it was at least her first, at least definitely the first time. It was very hard for her to watch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you get the same kind of reaction, from your husband?
Not really. And I've had a lot of people ask me that, and I've asked him, you know, and part of it is he started coming, to our Saturday sparring sessions just to hang out, when I was still in Portland. So he saw me in that environment, you know, many times, like sparring with friends, many times before ever seeing a competition. So that kind of helped lead the way. And when I've asked him before, if it's, you know, if it's hard to watch me get hit and, you know, he's there for my losses as well as my wins. And he said that he's so confident in my abilities that he feels like I will protect myself and take care of myself. And that's in competition. The one time that he has expressed a little bit of sort of like, wow, are you sure? Is when I tell him that I'm just going to go to some other gym and go to spar, you know, and that when you don't know who you're going to be matched up with, and you're not sure how much control they have or don't have. And, probably the most hurt I have ever gotten in sparring have been in those instances, you know, somebody brand new, significantly larger, more skilled or whatever. So those are the ones that he said worry him. And it's the same for me too, you know, and you know, getting in the ring to spar with maybe a 30-year-old guy who's got 20 pounds on me is different than stepping in the ring against, you know, a 55-year-old woman who's my size, you know? Mm. So, and there's just different levels all across the board. So, that's where he has expressed concern much more so than any competition.
Hmm. When you made the decision to start hanging out with the fight team, was it already a foregone conclusion for you that I am going to compete?
I hoped so. I wanted to.
Hmm. Even from the beginning, huh?
Well, from once I started sparring and I got invited to come to the team workouts, that's when I started asking about competitions. And the gym that I was at had one other person who had talked about competing who was over 40. I don't think they had yet taken anyone to a master's competition. So that whole process was new. I mean, the coaches there knew about it. They knew there was a master's division. There were options for people my age. So that was good. And then we just had to learn all the different rules and the different equipment and, you know, kind of dig into that a little bit. Cause it was new for all of us on both sides. But yeah, once I started sparring, then I wanted to find out how do I kick this up a notch and start competing. Wow.
So what was that like for you to actually enter into your first competition and, you know, the environment of mm-hmm. it and just the energy of it? Because some places, like, you know, you have competition in the same place that you train, the exact right. same location.
Right.
But it's a different feel. It's a different energy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's one thing that I always recommend to people who ask me about competing for the first time. I'm like, well, number one, before anything else, you need to start sparring other places. Make some calls to some other gyms because you need to spar with other people, other styles, other levels of experience, and have that fear of walking into a place you've never been into, never been to before, as opposed to always staying at your home gym and having that comfort. You know, even if you bring other people into your home gym to spar with you, there's very much that, just that comfort level of, you know, this is where I am every day. This is where I work out. So for my first fight, it was in Portland, but it was at a different venue. And it was not a master's specific event. So there were, you know, bouts with 9 year olds and then, you know, a few people in their 20s maybe, and then there was me. and I leading up to like the day of the fight, I kept telling myself I was handling it all just fine. I was staying calm. I was, you know, it was all good. And even the warm up and everything to walking out into the venue. But the reality is, you know, you walk up those steps and climb through the ropes and, you know, my heart was just beating so fast. Oh God, it hasn't even started yet, you know? And it was just definitely the nerves and the anxiety. And it was fantastic that being part of that gym and that team meant that there was a huge support crowd. You know, everybody went to all the fights, you know, the team and people who were there for fitness, they all went, cheered everyone on, which was fantastic. You know, I come out of the back room where I'd been warming up and then there's just, you know, people cheering and yelling and it's all great. And all, you know, all my friends are there. And gym friends, I actually didn't want anyone else there who wasn't familiar with boxing, just the boxing friends. So, but you know, there were probably 20 or 30 people there cheering and yelling my name and everything. And that was all fantastic, you know, for the support. But it also sort of like led to more anxiety, you know? and the venue itself is one that you like pack a lot of people into a small area. And once people start cheering and yelling, it just gets really loud and you can't hardly hear anything. So for that first fight, I know part of it was me and anxiety and nerves and the adrenaline and everything else. And part of it was just the face and the cheering and the yelling. But I went through 3 rounds and I could never hear a single thing that my coach said from the corner. It was just like, was all I heard for all 3 rounds. and it was not a great performance on my part. And, I mean, it was okay. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't like embarrassingly bad or anything, but it wasn't what I knew I could have done. And I lost. Mm-hmm. And I was especially mad because it was like 2 or 3, maybe 4 or 5 days, something less than a week after my 48th birthday, I believe. Mm-hmm. So I was cutting weight to get to be able to have that match. And so I hadn't had any birthday cake. I hadn't done anything to celebrate my birthday. And then I lost. So
on top of it all.
But it immediately got me looking to, okay, well, when's the next event? You know, what can I learn from this? What can I do better? What do I need to change? And let's try this again.
So you didn't wallow. You bounced back fairly quickly.
I wallowed for a little while, I'm sure. A little bit. But you know, the fight was on a Saturday and I think I was back in the gym Monday or Tuesday.
Boom. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, so, I kept the wallowing hidden deep inside.
That was the fuel.
Yeah.
To be going. So how did that compare with your next competition? Did you still have the same intensity? Was it still have the same kind of nerves? Or did that just go away?
It didn't completely go away, but it was so much better. And it was also a venue out of town. In a really huge space. So the sounds kind of traveled more. It didn't stay so, you know, it didn't get so incredibly loud. And there were only, you know, maybe 5 or 10 people that I knew in the whole space because it was an out of town competition. But I think we had 5 people from our gym competing at that event. And we all traveled. There was just a few hours away, but it felt very different from prep and everything else. And part of it is because we had 5 people competing in that event, you know, the coaches were busy warming up each person as the bouts came up. So I spent, if I remember right, I was pretty late on the card. So I spent a lot of time wandering just these empty hallways of this. It was in a, like a convention center type thing that had nothing else going on. So we had spaces. And so I could just get away from everything. and go down at the end of a hallway where it was just silent and put my earbuds in and do my own warm up and shadow boxing. And I think that was a little bit more calming than hearing all of the craziness. So then once it was finally time for my bout, I went out there and I felt more confident. I clearly heard everything my corner said, and it just, I felt more confident and in control. And it was a great match. Mm.
So it's not just the ring, and for the people from the outside looking in on this, like, it's a competition, is a competition. You're in the ring. It's, mm-hmm. but it's not just that. There's a lot of other factors that could affect your performance there. Even like just, you know, even just for the first, you know, couple hours or two, the few minutes before you actually step into the ring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And in that particular one leading up to it, I had a bad cold for like 6 or 7 days before that. And I was feeling crummy. And I remember asking, you know, should I back out of this? And my coach said she thought I would be fine. And I was blowing my nose and coughing and sneezing before I stepped into the ring and did better than I did in my first one. So, you know, there's a lot of different factors that go into it. And so I feel like so much of it is mental. So, I mean, if you're not in the, no matter how well you prepared, no matter how hard you trained, if you're not in the right headspace, it's going to be rough, you know, and maybe it's not that way so much for other people. It is for me. I can't sort of just like tune out or block off certain things going on in my life and, you know, I should probably get better at being able to do that. But, you know, everything affects us and it all comes out in your performance. Yeah.
You mentioned something earlier when you talked about that first, your first competition, mm-hmm. and you made a distinction between, as far as your supporters, so the people that you know, like there's the boxing people. Yeah, and there's the non-boxing people.
Right.
What is that? What do you mean by that?
Well, so a lot of good close friends of mine that had known me for a long time were really supportive and they wanted to come. And I don't know. I just felt like the people from the gym who have been to other amateur fights, they, you know, you sort of know what that environment's going to be. You kind of know what it's going to look like. And for other people that have no background or connection to boxing of any kind, and all they've seen is pros on TV, you know, it's the same as any sport. If you go to a amateur, I don't know, you pick any sport, you know, and you go watch kids play it or amateurs or whatever versus watching the pros on TV, it is such a different experience, you know. And I didn't want the stress of knowing that they were there watching. Even though I knew they would be there for support, and you know, it's not like they were gonna look down on me if I didn't do well or anything like that. It was more about just, I had seen other circumstances where, you know, somebody for their first fight told everybody, friends, relatives, everybody, and all these people came, and then I think I would be the same way. You know, you feel that pressure of, I have to do well. These people all came to see me, and I didn't want to add that pressure to my first fight. So I'm a little more relaxed about that now, but for that first one, you know, I wanted a little bit of division there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, no, minimize the distractions for your performance.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So it's not such that you're kind of, you know, like the Seinfeld thing, right? Worlds collide kind of thing. Worlds collide, Jerry. You know, it's right. It wasn't anything necessarily like that, at least in that particular instance.
No. It was just a very conscious decision on my point, on my part to, like you said, limit the distraction. So, and then, you know, like I said, the second fight was out of town, so it was really just my teammates that were there. Third fight was also out of town, and just one other teammate and my coaches went to it. So I didn't know anybody else there. drawn a blank of what the next one was. the next was it was a full year between fights 3 and then 4 and 5, which were at Sunny's, and I had moved to Southern California between those fights, between the 3rd and the 4th. So I registered for Sunny's and went, just my husband and I went, and you know, I recognize a couple of faces there from having been there the year before, but you know, I don't know anyone in Phoenix, and I had just moved to LA, so I didn't have friends in LA that would go or anything like that. So that's changing a little bit. And then with Dreamland, just recently, we had a crew of people from our gym in Long Beach that went up to San Jose. So that was good. But it felt nice to have sort of that team camaraderie and support.
So there is a difference. I mean, it's like you're the one that's in the ring, mm-hmm. right? So, I mean, there's like, it's not a team sport per se.
Right.
But it does make a difference for you when you have your team with you.
Right, exactly. Someone else that understands not only the sport, but understands what you're going through leading up to it and kind of knows what to say and not to say and what you might need for support and when you might need to just like hang out on your own or whatever. You know, there aren't, especially at this age, there just aren't a whole lot of people who do this. So having people around you that are also competing and you're supporting each other, can make a difference.
Let's talk about that for a bit, because you're right, particularly in boxing, mm-hmm. get to this time in our lives, you know, and like predominantly you don't see that, you know, you don't see people, you know, 35 and over, you know, even older than that are doing this.
Right.
What is, well, I guess that's the thing. Like, how do you, is that something that you feel like you need to handle at all? Like, is that a big deal for you? Is that something that sticks out in your mind when you are doing it?
Just the age?
Yeah, it's the age, and you know, there are fewer people that you can spar with as compared to like, you know, kids. They'll spar. There's no lack there, you know.
Right, exactly. I guess the biggest part of the age for me is knowing that I'm not going to just sign up for a competition or a tournament and just show up and hope that something happens. You know, I'm going to put the homework in myself. I'm going to call other gyms. I'm going to reach out to people online. I'm going to find people online and say, hey, do you have your yellow book? You know, here's some upcoming tournaments. Are you thinking about going to any of these? I think we might be a match age and weight wise. I did a lot of that when I first moved to California. And that's the biggest difference. But also sort of a different, the events that are Masters specific, like Sunny's and like Dreamland. And I went to Gleason's this past summer. There's a different feel. And I don't really know how to describe it, except that, you know, when you're at an event with everything from 9-year-olds through teenagers and people in their 20s, you know, some of those boxers want to make a career out of this. They want to become pro fighters. They are, you know, and so the competition is different for them, you know, whereas in Masters boxing, the people who are doing this are doing it because they love the sport. They love the competition. They love the sport. They love the challenge. Because otherwise, well, there's no other reason to do it. You know, we're not moving our way up through some bracket to then go to regionals and state. And then, you know what I mean? So it changes the feel. And everyone is so friendly and so supportive of each other. And it just makes it a very cool atmosphere. That is definitely something that I feel is very different among Masters events versus the events that I've gone to where, you know, I happen to be the one old fighter among all the youngsters. I even had one example where I'm trying to remember which fight it was. It was my second one, the one that was out of town. We were lined up. We all did the weigh-in. And first there was one weird instance at the weigh-in because there's all these like little girls, you know, lining up. And then I'm getting in line and I'm pulling off my sweatpants and someone comes over to me and they're like, "Whoa, what are you doing?" Like I was just some crazy person taking my clothes off, you know? And I'm like, "I'm getting ready to weigh in." And like, "Oh, you're fighting?" Yeah. Yeah, I am. And then we left from that line to go for the line for the doctor. And I get up to the front of the line and I sit down and the doctor's listening to my heart and puts the blood pressure cuff thing on. And he did the same thing. Before I sat down, he looked at me like, I think they all thought I was somebody's mom. Mm. Like I must be there because my kid is fighting, you know? And I sat down and he looked at me funny and said, "Oh, are you competing?" And I said, "Yeah." And I hand him my book. And so he starts doing the exam and he's writing stuff down. And then he looks up at me and he says, "You're probably the oldest person I've ever done an exam for." Wow, everyone's just making me feel really confident here today leading into this fight. So there's been some funny, you know, and that's, you know, people just aren't used to seeing it at an event where it tends to be kids and teenagers and maybe people into their 20s, you know, then all of a sudden have a 50-year-old walk in. So at least at master specific events, you don't have that sort of like, "Wow, what are you doing?" kind of thing.
Well, here's, if they're reacting that way to you at a, like a boxing event, uh-huh. not a master's box, but at a boxing event already.
Yeah.
What do you have to deal with when you talk with people and then they find out through either you bring it up or someone brings up, "Hey, did you know this about Larissa?"
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
How does that play out?
It usually people are kind of surprised. Mm-hmm. But it always ends up, you know, leading to interesting conversations. And, you know, I've never had anyone like react negatively. Like, what are you doing? You know, everyone's always like, "Wow, really? Oh, that's cool." You know? And then asking questions about, you know, how you go about it and where are these competitions and, you know, what are the rules and what's different about it? And do you fight 10 rounds? No, I'm like, even the 19-year-olds don't fight 10 rounds. They fight 3. Yeah. So it's always, you know, it always leads to interesting conversations. So, yeah.
Larissa, this was awesome. I appreciate you so much being on here. You know, I'm sure that some people that find their way to listening to this might want to get a bit more of you, connect with you in some way. Mm-hmm. What might be the best way for them to do that?
You know, either I've had people reach out to me about boxing and about competitions and things through Facebook, through Instagram. Any of that's good. Or through my gym in Long Beach, which is Hill Street Boxing, in Signal Hill. And it was kind of nice because I have to say one little thing, and I'm sorry to throw this in right at the end as we're wrapping up.
No, not at all.
The move from, we had lived in Oregon for over 20 years, 25 years, and it was a job change for my husband that brought us to Southern California. It was a rough transition, you know, cause it wasn't a decision that I made like, "Hey, let's move to LA," you know, I thought we would live forever in our house in Portland. And we got down here and within a week of not working out, you know, just being busy unpacking and stuff, I was like, I gotta find a boxing gym. I have to. And I had, before we moved, I had researched ones that I wanted to go check out. And so we spent, it was Memorial Weekend, year and a half ago, driving around to different gyms. And I walked into Hill Street and spoke to the owner there for about an hour and scheduled a one-on-one private session with him the next morning and never looked back.
Mm.
And I was telling someone at Dreamland just a week and a half ago, who asked me about, "Hey, didn't you used to live in," there were some fighters from Portland there, and said, "Hey, didn't you live in Portland, you know?" And how do you like the change and stuff? And I said, you know, it was a rough transition, but I have to say that what made the difference completely was finding a boxing gym, finding a boxing, and it may sound crazy, but for people who are in this, they know when you find your boxing family, you know, that's when things started to turn around for me with the move and feeling more comfortable with it and feeling more integrated in the community here and feeling like I had a support system. And that was everything. That was everything. And part of it was just, you know, literally like walking through the parking lot to walk up to the door and I could hear the bell going and I could hear someone on the speak bag. And it's like, I'm home, you know? And then went in and felt a good connection with the owner and started training there right away and started going every day. And that's still where I'm at now. I didn't make any changes. And it's just, yeah. I mean, you find where you feel at home in a boxing gym. It was like everything else sort of fell in place after that.
So. It's really interesting that you use that word as well as, because quite literally you weren't home. Your home was back in Portland.
Right.
Yet there's something in your blood that this feels, this is it now. I feel relaxed. I feel comfortable. I feel like it's almost like being embraced again.
Right, you know? Exactly.
Because those are the exact words that I used when I was transitioning myself, just, you know, around here in SoCal, finding a gym. And I told them, I said, I'm looking for a home. I mean, with no uncertain terms, I'm looking for a home.
Right.
And luckily for me, I found mine as well, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, no, I feel you there.
yeah. It makes all the difference, you know? Yeah.
Larissa, thank you so much again.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And thanks for doing these podcasts. It's fantastic.
Folks, I hope you appreciated that talk with Larissa. I enjoyed learning about all the little idiosyncrasies of her journey. I mean, again, from very unlikely beginnings, and it's just great to see people like her that have that passion for something they find later in life and just go full force after it. So anyway, folks, that is it for today's episode. This is Philip with the Everyday Fighter Podcast. Talk to you next time.